Florida State is heating up in the spring portal session. We are going to honor one of the greats to wear garnet and gold. Got some NFL draft talk, a big series for baseball this weekend. Michael, we got a whole gamut to cover today on this episode. So excited to jump into it, man. Just doing good. Florida State, this is what we asked for. We waited for some commitments, and now we got a good bit of them to talk about today. So, man, excited to jump into this one. Thank you guys for joining us. And before we do that, Michael, how are you, my friend?
Hey, Jesse. Yeah, good. I'm doing all great. You know, it's summer here in Florida, so the heat is starting to heat up. The pool is looking real nice and feeling real good, too. And Florida State finally has got some action in the portal. And excited to get into the episode.
Yeah, it's getting warm up here in South Carolina, too, where I'm at around Charlotte. Got to cut the grass about every hour and a half now, which is kind of aggravating. But I'm getting a little bit of tan. I can't really tell on camera. I'm catching up to you a little bit here.
That's right. You got a long way to go.
I got a long way to go. So let's jump into these commits, man. So first up is a big one for Florida State, really. And this is the one thing when you look at the DB commits. You know, we had said in the previous episodes where we talked about portal targets, right? We said that you didn't need a veteran DB for a lack of talent in the room. Right. You got talent. You got young guys that are probably ready to step onto that field. You just don't have a lot of experience there in the secondary. And that was something that was going to be a little bit of a concern coming into the season. Maybe it would be better, and the example that I used was like a Fentrell Cypress, right? You go out, you find this veteran guy who can kind of lock down half the field. You don't have to worry about him out there, and then you just let the cream of the crop rise to fill the other positions. And so that's what Florida State gets in senior cornerback Jeremiah Wilson coming over from Houston. And this was a great addition, rated as a 4-star transfer by 247 and On3. Not the biggest corner out there, 5'10", 185. But when you look at his 2024 stat line, pretty impressive here. 24 tackles, 3.5 TFLs, 4 interceptions, 1 returned for a touchdown. And weren't you telling me in the last episode, I think Florida State had 4 interceptions all
on the whole season. Exactly.
Goodness gracious. So there you go. Ran 1 back for a touchdown, 4 PBUs, and had a great 86.7 PFF grade. That PFF grade was top 10 among all FBS cornerbacks with at least 100 snap minimum, and second in the Big 12, only behind Travis Hunter, who was a first-round NFL draft pick. Top 10 in the Big 12 in reception percentage allowed at 44.7%. And I love it, top 10 in lowest missed tackle percentage at only 7.1%. So you got a guy who doesn't give up a lot, and he's a sure tackler whenever he does get a hold of guys there. So, it's a veteran guy. I mean, you look at prior to Houston, he spent 2 seasons at Syracuse, 1 under Tony White. That's where the relationship came into play here. Played in 18 games there at Syracuse, including 5 starts, and had a 70 flat PFF grade there in 2023, which, if you've heard us talk about PFF grades before, 70 on the nose is about quality power 5 starter status.
Yeah.
So this is a guy that has over 1,000 snaps of experience, spent 1 year in the same defense, so he has a little bit of a head start there. Tony White also knows what he's getting in the player because he recruited him to Syracuse and coached him for a year. And, you know, even though he's not the biggest guy, he does attack and he does play aggressively against the run in the pass and has shown the ability to play in man and zone. So I think it's a great addition, man, for exactly what we said, right? Again, it's not a lack of talent. It's more of a lack of experience. And so now you get a guy 1 year remaining only, but he's a guy who can kind of steady the ship while all these young DBs mature.
Well, yeah, and I think, too, Jesse, this is the type of transfer portal recruit that you're not bringing in to back up anybody. This is probably one of your starters.
For sure.
And so you imagine it's probably him and a combination of either Jones or Riles or Joseph or Ricky. One of those, probably Riles is probably the one that probably opposite if we're just projecting right now. But this is a guy that, yeah, he has experience in this 3-3-5 defense. He understands it. He gets it. He was previously recruited by Tony White at Syracuse before Tony White went to Nebraska. So they had a great relationship there. And as soon as he got in the portal, from what I understand, from probably what you understand as well, they jumped on this one. They made this priority number one. So this was the big fish of at least right now, of what they got in the portal.
Yeah, and I mean, again, it's just going to bring that steadying presence to the backside of this defense here. So I like it. I think this is definitely a really big addition. And, you know, even what we talked about in the last episode, I thought where it was like, if you got this guy, then the Hawaii guy probably wasn't going to be a take at that point. Right. And I think he ended up going to Virginia Tech. So you got the guy you wanted. And so that's good. And that is Jeremiah Wilson there from Houston. So, man, again, this is the kind of guy that we were hoping to see them bring in.
That's right.
So next up here is a quarterback, and this is an interesting one, man. I think some people really kind of went both ways about this guy here. A little bit of love and a little bit of what are we doing? But hear me out here. I think when you look here at Jalen King coming from East Tennessee State, let's just be honest, man. He's essentially a Trevor Jackson replacement, right? Trevor Jackson departs the roster. You need that guy to kind of be your scout team guy right now. Right. And so when you look at King, he started his career at Gardner-Webb, then transferred to ETSU, led their offense in 10 games last year. Actually, fun fact for those of you watching, Florida State fans, split snaps with former FSU walk-on quarterback Geno English. So that's pretty cool there. But, man, I mean, when you look at King here, his passing numbers aren't going to wow you, right? 52.3% completion percentage for only 1,541 yards, 9 touchdowns to 11 interceptions. Again, that's why some people brought out the pitchforks, kind of like, what are we doing here? And I understand that. But I think at the same time, when you look at it, he did rush for over 500 sack-adjusted, PFF uses sack-adjusted yards. He did rush for over 500 sack-adjusted yards his two previous seasons at ETSU and Gardner-Webb. He averaged 5.6 yards per carry last year with East Tennessee and scored 5 touchdowns, only 2 fumbles and 92 carries. So he's got the running aspect, right? He's 6'3", 210. He's got the size aspect, right? And so you bring him in, he has over 1,100 snaps of experience, which is a lot for a guy who's still young. He's only going to be a true junior this year, which means he has 3 to play 2. And that can sound really confusing, but it means he has a redshirt year left in the tank, which will probably be this year. And then he has 2 more years of eligibility to actually play on the field. So he did mention something that was a little bit confusing, but he did mention something about redshirting at ETSU when the FSU offer came about. And so that leads me to assume that he's going to redshirt this year because he's probably not going to play when you have, pretty much 3 deep quarterbacks there already on the roster. But I think when you look at him going into the future, this is a future insurance policy, right? That's right. So you have a guy who he has the size, he has the rushing ability. He has over 1,000 snaps of experience at the quarterback position. He can redshirt for a year, and then he has 2 years to provide depth or compete for the starting job if you can get his passing to improve. Now, again, remember, Gus is a guy that used a converted DB at quarterback to lead Auburn to a national championship appearance. You know, we beat him in that game.
Yeah, let's remind them.
Exactly. But when you look at what Nick Marshall did back then, his passing numbers weren't great. His rushing numbers are what really made him dynamic. So I think when you know, again, people freaked out a little bit about this one, but when, you know, there's no point in freaking out about basically a fourth string quarterback right now. I just think with Trevor Jackson leaving, Thomas Castellanos is a 1-year guy. And what I think is getting glossed over here is you don't currently have a high school quarterback commit.
Correct.
So again, bringing him in and seeing how he develops kind of gives you that future insurance policy where you got maybe Brock Glenn next year. You hopefully hang on to Kevin Sperry because I think he's going to be the future of the position. Then you bring in him to provide depth, and then maybe you look at the portal there as well. So, yeah, man, I don't have a problem with the take. I don't think it's a big enough piece to be freaking out about, right? I know people are like, what are we doing? But, man, it's basically the scout team quarterback for this year, and then you see what upside he has in the future.
Correct. Yeah, absolutely. This is a Trevor Jackson replacement. Let's just call it what it is. This is a Trevor Jackson replacement. This kid, I would imagine, just based on who Mike is and Gus, they're not going to shoot this kid with unrealistic expectations about come in and compete and you get it. No, they're like, bro, we need a scout team quarterback. We need you to come in. We need to play hard. And it fits the Gus Malzahn offense. So now who's to say that, like, you know, I mean, we've heard of a guy named Stetson Bennett, who was a scout team quarterback and basically, you know, won a national championship. So it's not that it's impossible. Oh, thank you. Two
national championships.
Yeah. It's not that it's impossible. It's just not what he's being brought into. So everybody, let's put the pitchforks down. This is wise. This is what they needed to do. I bet they didn't spend chump of change in NIL for this kid as well either. He is a running quarterback. He is, he does, you know, his, obviously, like you talked about, his passing stats aren't the greatest. I think a lot of people's concerns was like, man, we now have five. I heard six, but I can only see five on the depth chart there, roster. We have five quarterbacks. And so is that like what you want? Shouldn't you be going after more other positions? But this is a Trevor King replacement. That's all it is. Let's move on.
Yeah. And I mean, again, I like I said, I just think it's one of them with him where, yeah, you're replacing Trevor Jackson for
Trevor
one.
Trevor Jackson. Thank you.
But yeah, same thing. But but at the same time, again, like I said, man, if he redshirts this year and he turns out to be something decent, correct, then you know, maybe next year or the year after that, if nothing else, you can put some packages in for him.
That's right.
You know, or maybe he turns out to be decent. It's not going to hurt to take a chance on the kid. It's just, I don't think it's worth getting your, you know, your feathers ruffled up over a guy who's right, going to be a scouting quarterback this year. Next up on the commit list, and now we're going to start to get into some youth here where we have some guys who don't have a whole lot of on-field experience. This is kind of an interesting direction that they've taken in the portal with getting a lot of youth. I'm going to talk about that here in just a minute after we talk about some of these players, but we're going to start with redshirt freshman defensive back transfer Jarvis Boatwright Jr. coming over from Southern California, 6'2", 195. And when I say DB, he is being brought in as a safety, but he did say in his post-commitment interview that he'll play wherever they want him to, right? And this was actually, if the name sounds familiar to you, this was a priority target out of high school for right, Florida State. He is from Clearwater. This was someone that they really wanted, you know, when Adam Fuller was here as a defensive coordinator, but he ended up signing with USC. And this is why we, you know, everyone always talks about nowadays, why you don't give up on these kids,
that's
why
right,
you keep those relationships and those doors open on a good note, because they can always find their way back. So now after 1 year at USC, he comes back to Florida State, did not play in 2024 at USC. So he doesn't have any on-field experience, but you do get that little bit of college strength and conditioning, that college development. He was a very productive three-star out of high school, over 100 tackles his senior year. Said he, like I said, he's willing to play wherever, and he understands. One thing that I like about this kid, too, in his post-commitment quotes, is that he said, like, look, man, they had a rough year last year. You know, we all have those throughout life. I didn't have the greatest year last year as a redshirt freshman, but it's about the response, right? And so he knows what he's getting when he's signing. He knows what he's coming into. And so, you know, this is a kid where – maybe he just provides competitive depth this year. But again, man, when we talk about this and the two offensive linemen that we're going to talk about, like Florida State's going after some pieces to really ensure the future. So, you know, this is one where you can almost kind of count this with like the 25 class or something like that. And so, you know, if they wanted him back then and they just missed out on that at that point in time, but they had the opportunity to go get him this round, then why not take him? And
why
so,
yeah,
you know, Florida State adds redshirt freshman DB Jarvis Boatwright Jr. from Southern California.
Yeah, I like this. I like that, you know, I like that they're going to have what I would imagine is quality young depth behind Shaheem, you know, right? KJ Kirkland, Earl Little Jr., Connor Hosey, Ashton Baker. They're going to have quality young depth that they can bring in and have somebody compete and challenge these guys that are in front of him. Now, yeah, there is not very much to maybe any expectation that this kid sees the field this year. But if he can push those guys in practice, that'll be super helpful. And I know we're going to get into this a little bit, but you know, the spring portal season, yes, you're going to try to fill needs that you find out that you have from the winter portal season. But man, also, if you think about it, this can be a second recruiting session for prep or young enough-ish players where you can go find the quality depth of freshmen who are like, man, I came here and this is actually not the school I realized I want to be at. Yeah. But I was a high three-star, high four-star, maybe even five-star player, and I just want to go to a different environment. And I'm a freshman, I'm a redshirt sophomore, something like that, or just a true sophomore. Now you can go get depth and recruiting. It's almost like a secondary high school recruiting kind of like season. So this is a good strategy that I think Florida State is leveraging. Of course, we still want them to go get production. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if they can find quality potential and backup roles, I think where they got in trouble last year, Jesse, is they recruited potential to actually start instead of recruiting production to start and potential to develop. I think so. I like this strategy that they're using this time.
Yeah, I think that's a great point because so many people look at the portal session, especially the spring one, where you're really just trying to like shore up that roster and the holes, where everyone thinks it's like a plug and play 1 year guy or something like that. But like you said, man, this could be something where a coaching situation changed, your program situation changed, maybe things just didn't work out at the former school. And now you have a guy that you maybe really wanted beforehand that you get a second opportunity at. And so you can start building for the future and building that depth. Like you said, I mean, he might play this year. We don't know, but as a redshirt freshman who missed spring camp, then you don't expect them to play a lot. But again, when you start having roster turnover going into the future, some of these guys, you know, you got a cornerback that's going to be leaving after next year, a safety that's going to be leaving. You can start building up that depth now. And again, like you said, man, sometimes you miss on a guy in high school that you wanted, but then you can get him right back. So why not bring that in? And I think it is a great point when you talk about the potential argument too, is I still would like to see them take some more experience at a couple of positions that we'll talk about here in a minute. But at the same time, you know, when you look at what they did last year, that was a great point where you brought in the potential, not the production, to be your starters, right? These are guys, some of these younger guys where it's like, okay, especially these two offensive linemen we're about to talk about. Yeah, they look like great additions right now, but you have time to get them ready before they get on the field.
Yeah.
You know, the problem with when you took some of that potential last year is you didn't really know what you were going to get, like a Marvin Jones Jr. You didn't really know. You had seen limited film at Georgia. You put him on the field in the starting role. Things didn't work out. Then you didn't have that backup plan behind it.
That's right.
So I like the way they've approached it by getting some experience and also getting some guys that are here for the future. And that brings us to the next guy that we're going to talk about here, and that's this pair of offensive linemen that we're going to kind of group together here. And to start up is freshman offensive tackle Jalen Matthews. I hope I'm saying that right. Coming from Rutgers. Man, Michael, there's not a whole lot to say about a guy who hasn't played. The only thing I needed to hear was 6'6", 340.
Thank you.
That's all. You can stop the conversation. That's all I needed to hear. Spent the spring at Rutgers, basically got a cup of coffee up there in New Jersey, went through their spring training, and then elected to hit the portal, and he has signed with FSU. Again, he is a true freshman.
Yeah.
So basically, he's going to count as a 2025 high school signee. Three-star, number 52 offensive tackle in the 2025 class. Again, just that massive size, man. I mean, you can't really claim any kind of college development or anything like that. Maybe he's had a couple months in the weight room. So this is probably not a guy that you're going to see really do a whole lot for you in 2025, right? And then even if you want to group in the next one here, redshirt freshman offensive guard Joshua Raymond coming from Vanderbilt, 6'4", 300 pounds, another massive guy, you know, Herb Hand. He is putting up a huge wall in front of on this offensive line here. I don't want to say a huge unit because I said that in the pre-show and it sounded really weird. So we'll just leave it at some big old boys there up front. But he didn't play last season either.
Yeah.
Now, he does come with a year of college development.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he has 4 years remaining. So you got two guys here that don't have a lot of experience, but they have multiple years remaining. And if you think about it, man, basically your entire offensive line is gone after next year because they're all veteran transfers. Right. So you need to start bringing in that next layer of talent. Hopefully you don't have to go to the portal for your starting five every single year. You can just promote some of these guys to starters. You know, he's a three-star coming out of high school, but was an Under Armour All-American. He is originally from Florida, so it was down to Florida State and UCF. So that's probably why he's just trying to get closer to home. But man, I mean, these are two big building blocks for the future on the O-line. And so I really like that. I think Raymond would probably be more expected to contribute this year as a redshirt freshman. I don't know how much I expect them to contribute, but again, it's all about building for the future.
That's right.
I will say that I expected someone who was a little bit more experienced that could play right now for the offensive lineman, and they may not be done. They may still be able to go find that. But I do like what they're doing at the position, right, by getting these pieces for next year and beyond that can develop when those guys move on. You know, it also probably tells you that they don't believe a whole lot in the depth that they have that's already there. They're willing to take these young guys. But to be fair, what Alex Atkins recruit has ever worked out? Not a whole lot. So let's just hope these guys come in and get developed under Herb Hand. I'm really got my eyes. One guy that's a backup to go along with all these new guys we're bringing in is Lucas Simmons this year. I'm really looking for him to be that like left tackle number two. Cause if you can compare him, he's like 6'6" or 6'7", over 300 pounds. So if you got two towering offensive tackles going into the future, you're already starting to build out some guards and whatnot, what you brought in the 2025 class, man. I think you're setting yourself up more for the future with these offensive line gets. So I like that, but I would still like to see an addition for someone who can probably play closer to right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And listen, I like these two additions. I mean, come on, man. You know, we've been recruiting these, you know, 6 foot, 220, 240, yeah. 280. Like, man, we needed some of them biggins, as they say. You know, we needed them hog mogs down there. And, you know, I think Herb Hand will do a great job at moving and developing those guys. We've seen him do this at UCF. We've seen him everywhere he's been with Gus Malzahn. Gus Malzahn's offense has always been able to run the ball. I mean, I believe it was the Matthews kid who said, man, I am so excited about being able to run the ball. I love pulling because he's going to play a tackle position. I love pulling. I love being able to do that. Some of that, if they slide the tackle over and some of that GT counter stuff that they like to do. And so like, man, let's get them. And I do agree with you, Jesse, that by them going out and getting these two specifically, they're young, that maybe they're wondering what kind of long-term potential depth they have with what they got. Now, again, it wasn't necessarily that recruiting offensive linemen were going wrong. It was the development. Coach Atkins just stopped developing them. And so I think with Herb Hand here, he can actually hopefully do a better, have a better outcome in helping these guys actually become really big, really strong, you know, good offensive line. I mean, I think the Matthew kid talked about, like, he said, Herb Hand is going to get me to the NFL. I was like, I really like that confidence because man ain't coached a game yet for Florida State, but you feel like he's going to get you to NFL. When's the last time we had an NFL offensive lineman drafted from Florida State? I mean, I think Cam Irving was the last one.
Yeah, it's been close to 10 years.
And it's been, and for the last 20 years, the offensive line has been a problem, a hit, miss, more miss at Florida State. And so, man, it'd be so nice for these two guys to get into that system and get developed. And that now we're seeing a steady, we're not having to go to the portal because we're actually recruiting better offensive linemen out of the high school ranks.
Yeah. And I mean, even then, like even if you want to consider it's almost like a high school recruit, you know, I mean, they're coming in from another program, but they're not that far removed from high school. So again, this is just building that base. And like you said, man, it was never really recruiting at Florida State that was the problem, because Alex Atkins, man, he could sign some blue chips. Yeah. It just didn't do anything. He let them chips go stale, man.
Yes, he did.
And so it you know, and there's been, and really even then, after most of them have moved on, they haven't really done a whole lot. So you almost wonder if there were some bad evaluations in there too. And so maybe when like Herb Hand sees what he inherited, because you know, he brought in what, 4 out of 5 brand new starters, and your fifth starter there is a transfer anyway from Florida. So like you're looking at the guys underneath that second level, and you're like, oh man, this just isn't what I need. And you know, he likes really, really big offensive linemen.
Yes, he does.
So I like the size that they brought in, man. I'm really excited about these two offensive linemen. Like I said, I don't know that you're going to see a whole lot out of them this year, but you're going to have to replace the entire unit next year.
That's right.
So now you're starting to build that right now, and then those can be guys that can be developed by the time that day comes. Again, I would still really like to see them add at least one more guy who can maybe be that 6th or 7th guy that does have some experience. But I like what they're doing here, building for the future. And you know what, man? All this youth in the portal tells you these guys are planning on being here for a little bit.
That's
so
right.
Hopefully they feel like they can win here. And I do want to touch on one thing, right? To a couple of the people that I've seen complain about these guys coming from unimpressive schools, because I have seen that, like, oh, it's from Rutgers or whatever. Like, they're not the best team in the Big Ten. Or, you know, Vandy, it's like the worst team in the SEC. Or, you know, Etsu or whatever. I get all that. Like, I understand Houston, and I understand people that look, man, our best transfers came from Albany.
Come on.
Western Michigan.
Preach.
Louisville.
Come on, somebody.
South Carolina.
What?
And Michigan State.
What?
Just to name a few. That's where our best transfers have come from. So, like, you just got to trust evaluations and hope it's better. I mean, look at the ones we got from Georgia and Alabama. Surely didn't
That's
work
right.
out. So, you know, I'll take it. So, like, there has been some complaints about how we're taking those guys. But it's like, look, man, I'm never going to complain about 6'6", 340 or 6'4", 300. I'm all about that. Come on. So, yeah, man, just excited to see them. Now, again, the one place that we still haven't seen any action, Michael, that, you know, it was the one place we wanted to see the most action was on the defensive line. So there is a Monmouth defensive end. Now, you don't talk about complaining about school names. I don't even know where Monmouth is. So I'm clueless on this one. But maybe he's the next Jared Verse. I don't know. Monmouth defensive end, Miles Mitchell, 6'4", 250, is supposed to visit today as we're recording this on Friday, if you're still watching that. 1 year remaining, 75 PFF grade, 34 pressures, 20 tackles, and 3 sacks last year. Productive guy. Would be nice to see Florida State add a defensive lineman here. This is some – that's really the one position of need, because now that you got Jeremiah Wilson from Houston, I think your secondary is pretty much good. I think you're chilling there, right?
Yeah.
I think your linebacker room didn't need any help to begin with. You already went out and did what you needed to do in the fall portal session. So now I would really just like to see one or two defensive linemen, one maybe like one offensive lineman that has some experience. Other than that, I'd like to see a wide receiver added. One more wide receiver, because you missed out on the Cincinnati kid.
Yeah.
So I would like to see them add one more wide receiver. Man, I think you're close, right? I think you've added some nice pieces for the future, like we talked about. But if you're talking strictly help for 2025, I'd like to see two defensive linemen, an offensive lineman with experience, and a receiver. And then really, man, I put a wrap on it. That's all I really need, unless you want to grab some pieces for the future.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. You literally nailed down what I would actually ask for. I know they're talking to that D lineman in Monmouth, which is in New Jersey, Long Branch, New Jersey. It's a Division I SCS school. New Jersey pipeline. Let's go. Yeah, I definitely would agree that we need a couple D defensive linemen. I think the DE position and maybe a D tackle. Like, it would make me feel so much better that they're quality depth. They can actually be helpful now for 2025. That'd make me feel so much better about that D-line situation. I think you need I would love another one to challenge, as you said, offensive line starter. Somebody with, like, not just 1 to 2 to 3. I mean, like, 4 years. They got 1 year left. They've played like 1,000 snaps. Like, their knees are hanging on my bandages.
Yeah. Got a neck beard. And a mortgage.
And a 401k. Like, let's get that guy to challenge for a starting position. And then, I think you need a rotational piece wide receiver to kind of make up for the Jaylen Brown dismissal there. And I think once you do that, you're good. I really not good in the sense like you're going to be a great team, but you're good as far as roster building for this season. I would agree with those.
To hit your goals in 2025, I think that's to assure that you hit your goals in 2025. Yeah. I think that's the biggest part, man. It's like when we say we want on the defensive line or whatever, we're not saying that we don't like the pieces that they have.
Right.
What we're saying is it's a long season. Guys get beat up and you miss time. And, you know, in 2022, when Fabian Lovett got hurt and missed most of the season, we couldn't stop the run up the middle because we didn't have talented depth.
That's right.
And so that's why I would just to protect your talented depth from injury and things like that, to allow guys, if they need to take a week off, to take a week off and heal up. Those are the kind of things that I would like to see them add. 2-3 more pieces, and I think you're good. But Florida State has been active in the portal, and so it is nice to see them start to bring some in. It took a little bit, but maybe they're just looking for the right fit there and the right guys that they wanted in the right places. So excited to see them get a little active there. But on that, Michael, I want to say one thing just to kind of touch back on the last episode, right, where we had talked about, because at the time we recorded that, Florida State did not have any portal commitments at that time. And so we were kind of just addressing a concern among the fan base about what's going on. Like, is this just, why are we not getting any commits? This is normally where we kind of make our hay, and it's not through high school recruiting. And there were some people in the comments that didn't like that, right? Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to address that for a second. Like, someone even asked if we were FSU fans. And I was like, okay, first off, do you see, this is my house, right? I don't get paid for this. This is my house. Obviously, I'm an FSU fan, season ticket holder, Battles End member, booster as well.
Come on.
So my thing with that is, like, look, guys, here's the honest truth. Me and Michael always try and be positive. We try and be one of the most positive outlets here. We love Florida State. We support Florida State, whether it be 13-0 or hopefully not 0-13 or 2-10.
Yes.
But we're here for it either way. We went 2-10 last year, guys. Every now and then, some there's gonna be. You can't be positive all the time, right? We have to be realistic too. We owe you the duty to be honest and realistic about what we see. If there's something, you know, at what do they say? If you see something, say something. So if you see something, say something.
That's right.
So we're gonna be positive, and we're not gonna trash on this program. I don't think we took shots at anybody in the last thing. We used a headline because we obviously need people to kind of click on the videos. That's what makes this thing go. And then we dispelled that headline for most of it because that's the narrative of what was going on in the fan base. You know, when you look at Plant the Spear, we have around 20,000 plus FSU fans. So I get a pretty good pulse of what the fan base is thinking at the time. And so there may be times where, like, you know, 2-10, 3 losing seasons in 5 years, no top 10 classes, and the first loss to an FCS program in school history. Good things don't lead to that.
That's
so,
right.
Like, sometimes you have to call it like it is. And I'm sorry that people don't like that. But it's not intentional to be biased against the program that we love and that we cover. It's just being honest because we owe that to you guys. But the other 99% of the time, we are going to be positive. So I just wanted to get that out there for the people who are a little bit upset over that last episode, because we got a couple comments in there that were kind of questioning where we were at. Because, you know, we raise legitimate concerns, and I think that's fair, and I think that's owed to you guys as an outlet, is to be fair and honest, and we wear garnet and gold glasses. There's no secret about that, but that doesn't mean that we can't be honest.
Yeah, you know, I'll say this, Jesse. We are fans, you and I. So that's where this starts at. We are fans. We love this program. We love Florida State. And so because we're fans, and because we have an outlet that is a fan-oriented outlet, we hear, we see, we read. You and I are consuming so much. And our job is to ask the question of the fan, right?
Right.
Yep. And right now, the headline in the fans of Florida State is, for speaking of last episode, that was the conversation. Has Mike lost the portal touch? That's not misleading. That's literally a question we are asking. And then we got on the show and we debated whether or not he had lost the portal touch, right? We spoke on the truths. We spoke on our opinions. We spoke on the facts that were out there, and we came to the conclusion. That's what this is. That's what we're trying to do. Listen, we can be sunshine pumpers at 19-0 and 23-3. Yes. We also have to be truth tellers at 10-23, meaning 3-6, 5-7. 2-10, right?
Right.
Because then what happens, Jesse, is if we are always sunshine pumpers, if we're always just spinning everything for good, then you, the FSU fan, who we assume are incredibly intelligent and not dumb, stop listening to us. Because you're like, they're just going to be all positive, right?
Right.
They're not going to speak truth. On the other side, if we're all negative, you're going to be disinterested because it's toxic. And so we try to be a balance of both, with a lean towards positive. We're going to try to find the good, but we're also not going to hide from what is true. And so as an outlet, as a fan site, we are fans, and we're just trying to ask the question that fans are asking and having conversation around. That's why we love this sport. That's why we love this university, so that we can talk about the thing we love. And it's therapy, honestly, for me.
Yeah,
such a therapy.
Yeah, no, I agree, man. And it's just something that I wanted to address, because you're right, man. I mean, again, we're going to support this team no matter what.
Right.
And we're always going to try and be positive. And, you know, being positive last year got us called idiots.
That's right. That's right. It did.
But we were wrong. So you have to kind of, you know, you have to call it like it is, you know.
Yeah.
And so I agree, man. But no, we're always going to be fans. We're always going to try and be positive. But I think the important message away from that is, like, just watch the episode and hear the context, right? You talk about smart. I am kind of dumb, and I have to come up with all these headlines, you know, over here, and I do the best I can, but every now and then I can't just title every single one FSU is great. Watch this show.
Right.
You know, after the 8th loss last year, it had been a little suspect. Is FSU really that great?
Are they okay?
And so denial is one of the stages of grief, you know? But I think really what it comes down to, man, at the end of the day is, like, we're going to be positive. We're going to support this program. But Michael, I have never once put on a shirt that said Mike Norvell University or Mike Norvell State University.
That's
or
right.
Whatever it is. Like, I don't care about, I want Mike Norvell to be our head coach, and I want him to succeed. I'm not cheering for Mike Norvell to succeed because I like Mike Norvell.
Correct.
I'm cheering for him because I love Florida State University.
Thank you.
You know, when he reached the end of his tenure, God rest his soul, I thought it was time for Bobby to go.
That's right.
Because he was trying to hang on for too long.
That's right.
When Willie wasn't working out, I supported him. I was swag surfing Virginia Tech, all doing
yes,
all that.
Yes, you were.
It was stupid. It was time for him to go. Like, no one person, one podcast, one coach, one this. Player is right. bigger than the program. And
That's
I
right.
just want what's best for the program.
That's
so
right.
we're going to be positive when positive is needed. And we're going to be realistic when realistic is needed. Because I care about the good of university, of, you know, Florida State University, and not necessarily who is in control at that time.
That's right.
So that's it. That's my rant. Hear me out. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. The next subject we want to get into, talking about this, man, this is crazy. I saw this headline today. We were talking about this before the show. Do you see that Texas is rumored to have an NIL budget of $35 to $40 million in 2025? Now, this does include the revenue sharing and right. their NIL on top of that. But, man, I think this just goes back to, like, and the reason we're putting it in this order is because this kind of ties into what we just talked about, where you have to be, you know, realistic about yeah. how you talk about this program. Because Ohio State was at $20 million last year, and that was just straight NIL. That was not any kind of revenue sharing. And we were rumored to be around $12 million. Man, I mean, we all want Florida State to be great, and we all want Florida State to compete for national championships and be in the playoffs every single year. But right now, in the current structure of college football, where there are no rules, there are no limits on what you can do, and, you know, I don't blame these kids for being That's money right. hungry, but money rules the roost right now. I don't know, Michael. I'm not the smartest, but 12 and 40, that ain't the same. And so that's I mean, that's hard, man. So, like, you also have to understand that Florida State can be good, and this is why they want to leave the ACC, because right. then you will have more money to put in your toolbox towards revenue sharing. When you get to the Big Ten or the SEC, but man, I mean, there's these four or five select programs out there that just got uber money that you have to compete against. That
right.
man, I don't care what the brand is on your chest. Like, Benjamin is the brand that they're waving around, and that's a pretty good one.
That's a pretty good one, and it's green. I mean, you think about all the disadvantages that Florida State have, and this is not to, like, just be woe is us, but I mean, we're the youngest, one of the youngest football powers in the country. We have the youngest alumni base. We don't have deep pocket alumni bases like Texas does, like Ohio State does, right? We don't have the same conference prestige like Ohio State at the Big Ten or Texas with the SEC, because they left the Big 12 because they were in the Big 12 for the longest yeah. time and couldn't dominate that conference. Let's just put that out there, right? You know, there's a lot of big money, oil money, deep-seated, rooted money in Texas, right? And so, yeah, when you see a number like this, it does, in a lot of ways, kind of maybe depress you. You're like, gosh, yeah. man, I don't know if Florida State will ever get that. And then you worry a little bit about, you know, just the era and change of college football based on NIL. You know, when college football went from a poll champion, you know, where they were named the champions by poll, to when they switched to the BCS, you had programs like Virginia Tech and Nebraska, even Tennessee for a long time, went sideways, went wayward, yeah. right? You know, Tennessee has made its way back, but Nebraska is so far away from being the program it was in the early 90s. And now with this change in era to the NIL, you're starting to see other programs, you know, come back and others fall away. And now with this new change is coming up with the House settlement and the $20 million, and now you got Texas with a one-year boost to their NIL to $35, $40 million. You're wondering, like, okay, please, let's not, like, let Florida State slip into the yesteryear and it be the thing that used to be, because we could not figure out a way of staying up with the Joneses. And listen, there's a booster out there worth billions of dollars. Can we repair that relationship with her?
Please.
Like, please. But then secondarily, this is why it's important for Florida State to get out of the ACC, so they can get into a conference that can boost, that can take one of the most iconic brands in college football and give it more, so that it can generate the kind of funds that can get us competing at the national playoff level again.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, money is great, but Texas A&M is a great example of how
exactly.
money shows you can't win with just straight money. You still got to
right.
have the coaches and all that stuff
and
in place.
And the culture and everything.
And the culture to be able to make it work. And I think, you know, Florida State, yes, we did pay a lot for that 2023 team, some of the pieces on there, but that was kind of almost like a money ball team. You
yes,
know what
right.
I mean? And so you can see where it cannot work by money, and it can work by the culture and the coaching, right? And so that is important. But then, like I was telling you before the show, man, I saw where Texas Tech, who signed like the number one portal class just completely out of nowhere, their NIL collective's founder sold his father's oil company for $4.2 billion with a $1 billion. So like all it takes is that one. Yeah. All it takes is that $4 billion. All it takes is that, you know, that money, that one mega booster to just be like, hey, man, right. I feel like winning a national championship and things can change. Michigan.
That's right.
Their guy is worth like $10 billion or something like that. It's just crazy. And I mean, that's not something that coaching and culture can always compete with when you just have that kind of money, you know? So yeah. Like you said, man, maybe we can get the Spanx lady, you know, back on track here and donate some money. I'll wear some Spanx on the show, Michael.
Dude, I would too.
I don't know what Spanx are, but I'll wear them for the show if it means getting us a couple of five stars here. You know, I'm a Florida State fan. I'll do it. So anyway, but on to the next thing that I did, you know, this was pretty cool too. This was a fun moment. I did see where, you know, John Gruden, most of you guys know, Tampa Bay coach, Raider, I think it was Raiders coach for like an hour and a half. he gets these boxes sent to him. I don't know why they're sending these boxes, but he did get, I've been waiting on Florida State to send the box. And it's basically just an equipment box with a letter from the coach or whatever. And he opens them up on social media. I shared it on, I know I did X, maybe Facebook as well, if you want to go watch it there. It's super cool, man. Florida State, shout out to Florida State equipment crew or whatever department. Man, they really knocked it. They sent two boxes. They even got one from the baseball program as well with some cool baseball gear. Man, it was awesome. He got two helmets. He got a garnet helmet, a gold helmet and a white helmet. Tons of shoes, man. It was just super cool to watch. You know, hey, FSU equipment, if you're watching the show, your boy could use a box, maybe a small box even. I'll take something. But, man, that was a pretty cool moment to see. I've been waiting on that one. There's been some pretty cool gear. But, man, FSU actually absolutely hooked him up.
Yeah, Jason Beisden is the FSU equipment manager. Man, kudos to you, bro. Also, I want to become your best friend because I love that white FSU helmet, the gold one too. I'd love the gloves. I'm just giving you my Christmas wish list. But that was phenomenal. I literally like just ate it all in. And it's not even just a fact of all the cool equipment. Trust me, the equipment was probably the best thing.
Yeah.
It was a fact that Gruden was just going name by name, by name of the great FSU people. And he was just like thoroughly excited. And then one of the guys that was like part of his little team there is a Florida State alum. And he was like teaching him how to do the war chant.
Yeah, because his war chant was rusty.
It was terrible. It was terrible. But like, it was so cool. And that, think about what that does for the university. A guy like John Gruden, yes, he's repairing his reputation after all that stuff, but like, it's John Gruden. The dude won a Super Bowl with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Like, people in Florida still love him. And so for him to be doing that, that just helps FSU. That's a free commercial for FSU right there.
Right. Yeah, it was awesome. And I think it was probably the best box that I've seen so far. And I've watched a lot of them because, I mean, it's some cool stuff. So, yeah, by the way, guys, DMs, you can hit me up if you want to ship one of them boxes my way. I'll get you my address. But, you know, the next thing that I want to talk about here, and we want to make this a whole segment of the show because I feel like he is owed this.
Yes.
Some news. It's some unfortunate news that broke yesterday with Jordan Travis announcing that he is retiring from football. And it unfortunately came because – obviously, you guys know he had the leg injury, and then he was still drafted by the Jets, and they tried to do the rehab there. I heard some rumors last year where they said that they actually pushed him a little bit harder than maybe they should have with his rehab, and things didn't go as well as they thought. Obviously, he's able to, like, you know, walk and live an everyday life, but in a long, heartfelt letter that he wrote and posted on social media with the announcement, basically just said that through the medical staff and everything, he's been advised to go ahead and medically retire. It's just best for him and where he's at with his leg and his rehab. And man, it's just so unfortunate that one singular moment in a game that almost doesn't even matter changed the outcome of so many things, the ripple effect of his NFL career, the potential of him winning a Heisman, the potential of Florida State winning a national championship that year. That one split second just changed so much in so many lives. And so it's sad to see him retire, but I know Jordan has a bright future ahead. He's obviously a great person. He's very intelligent. You know, at least now it's unfortunate that he never got to really play in the NFL, but at least he did go through the draft process. He spent a year with the Jets to kind of see what the NFL is like. I don't know what his future plans are, but if they're in coaching, that's great experience that he can have. Personally, when you look at the success that Mike Norvell has had with and without Jordan Travis, Mike, you owe the man a job.
Tony Tokeras, good day, sir.
Get to packing, buddy. Get you up out of here. So, yeah, I think he owes him. I think he owes him a job. And, you know, I would love to see Jordan come back to coach at Florida State in Garnet Gold, man. Because, I mean, really, and so we just want to take a minute to give him his flowers, man. Like, Jordan will go down as one of the greatest to ever wear Garnet Gold. Now, I know he was here for a long time, so he did amass some, you know, some records. But just, you know, when I think, especially in the new NIL era and stuff like that, Jordan was kind of that one player where he got to Florida State when it was the just the transfer portal. And then he kind of went into the NIL era. But, man, Jordan just felt different, right? He actually felt like one of the last few players that you see that just really genuinely loved the place he was at. He loved being at Florida State. He loved being a Seminole. He loved the coaching staff, the fans, and all this type of stuff, man. So I thought it was just – it was more about who Jordan was, like, off the field that made him special.
Yep.
Most of you have heard me tell this story 100 times, so it's probably nothing new to you. But in 2023 – up until the ending, was one of the greatest seasons that I will probably ever have as a fan. Our season tickets were actually one row in front of Jordan Travis's family. So I sat right in front of his mom, his sister. I sat right by Devin through basically the whole 2023 season. And so I don't know, man. Like, I'm not gatekeeping Jordan Travis, but I almost feel like I have, like, just a different level of, you know, I never even met the guy but one time. But I just feel different about Jordan Travis, right, versus someone I just watched on TV on Saturdays. And so, you know, just that and then watching him play on the field and, you know, I come back to the LSU game where he took the shot to the head, the obvious targeting, still completed the touchdown, some of the just absolutely Houdini things he does on the field, you know, with the Florida game where he dodged, like, basically the entire team and still went in for a touchdown. But yeah, man, just shout out to Jordan, man. I'm sorry that your career had to come to an early ending like this, but I know you have a bright future ahead. And, you know, I'll throw it to Michael to share some of his favorite moments. But, man, from me personally, just thank you for all the great moments and memories, man. It's just like you had a magical career at Florida State. You really – I think he was the cornerstone of bringing this program back to where it was until we went 2-10, of course. But man, just a great dude on and off the field. You never heard one bad thing about Jordan off the field. And man, I just think that speaks to his character, and he's got a great family. And man, I just appreciate your time in Garnet Gold.
Yeah, man. Gosh, there's just so much flowers to give Jordan Travis. Here's where I'll start. I'm not trying to keep this too long. Is that, you know, when I think of all the quarterbacks I witnessed in my lifetime of watching Florida State. Now, I know there's guys that played that I didn't see, like Rick Stockstill and Thad Busby and, you know, some of those guys back there. I didn't see them play, and I'm sure they were great. But when I think of the top four quarterbacks in my lifetime, I mean, it's Ward. It's probably Winston. Gosh, but him and Winkie are pretty close. But Ward, Winston, Winkie, Travis to me.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you just can't. I mean, do you remember his first game? You remember his first game? Jimbo's gone. Everybody's giving up on the season. They're at Boston College. They're down 14-10, I think, in the third quarter. What's his name? Blackman gets hurt. Jordan Travis comes in and literally on a zone read takes it 25 to the house for a touchdown. And we're like, it was Taggart. Where in the world has this been? Like, what?
Yeah.
And then the back and forth between him and Milton. I was there at the Notre Dame game at Doak Campbell Stadium when Milton, you know, couldn't play. And they put Jordan Travis in and he led us back, got us into overtime. Like, I mean, I just seen it all. The LSU win was insane. The first year I was sitting in California watching it. You were there in the Superdome, one of the best games, you said. I went to the next year in Orlando, and the dude just balled out 3 touchdowns to Keon Coleman, 1 to Jaheim Bell. Yeah. I mean, he was just slicing and dicing that defense there. I mean, you think about all the games he bailed us out on, the crazy runs. he not only dodged the entire Florida defense, but also the referees that game as well, too.
Yeah.
I mean, it was insane what Jordan has done. And he was, you know, he was, I don't remember if he was the top five Heisman finalists, but he was fifth in the Heisman finals. He was right there on the cusp. I mean, but more than just Jesse, more than just what he did on the field, it was the stuff off the field. I mean, he was just an incredible leader. The stories you would hear about how he would just stand and take pictures and talk to people and visit those who were sick, and what he meant to the program when FSU was in its worst. And the dude stuck around when he could have left. Yeah. I mean, one of my favorite stories they've told so many about is when he was going to basically give up football. He thought he was done. Yeah. And Kenny Dillingham and Mike Norvell was like, don't do it. Don't give up. Like, we see something great in you. And the fact that he stuck it out. Like, you talk about perseverance. You talk about that. I was in the stadium the day against Northern Alabama. And I cried. I turned 40 this year, bro. And I cried so hard that day, that night.
Yeah.
Not because of the season. Yeah, like I was devastated for the season. But for this kid who worked his tail off to get this. And I'm so glad he got to hear his name on draft day. I'm so glad that he got that with the family. And yeah, Mike, listen, bro, if there's any way we can get this guy back on the program somehow, make a room. And I'll be the first to tell you who should go to make that room. But yeah, kudos to Jordan Travis, man. A great Noel, always Noel blooded. And I mean, he's got a forever fan in me.
Yeah. I mean, he was a big part of the culture turnaround at Florida State. You know, obviously, like we said, 3-0 against Miami as a starter, beat Clemson on the road for the first time in 10 years. It's just so many great moments, man. I mean, you hate to see like
4th and 14. How can I forget 4th and 14?
You know, and there was just so many. It was just so close to being the perfect ending, right? That maybe go on to win the Heisman, maybe go on to win a national championship and then play in the NFL draft. But, man, I mean, sometimes life just
– yeah,
bad things happen to good people, man. But hopefully, again, I know Jordan's going to land on his feet, and I know he's going to be fine. And like I said, man, I would really, really love to see him come back to Tallahassee in some form or fashion.
Yes.
You know, again, it's whatever he has planned, if he wants to be there or not. But, you know, even as like a – now you can have the paid – outfield staff, so an analyst or something, just bring him back around Tallahassee. And I believe he was at like one of our two wins last year too, so even being in town, so he's a good luck charm if nothing else. But the last couple of things we want to touch on here as we wrap up the show is, speaking of the NFL draft, I just want to give a quick shout out to Azarre Thomas, round three, pick 73 to the Jets. Speaking of the team that Jordan just retired from, he will be joining some other Noles there. And so excited. Man, I feel like they probably got a little bit of a steal there going all the way to round three for AZ. But I know there were some questions with the speed, but they know he's a sticky corner. So they get a good pickup there. You know, love the pick. Don't love the team with the Jets, but you know, it is what it is. But hey, Jermaine Johnson's up there as well, too. Derek Nottie's over there now. I think Pokey Wilson is signed there, too.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yep.
And then Josh Farmer goes round four, pick 137 to the New England Patriots. So that's cool to see as well. See him get his name called. I know the Pats, my wife's a Pats fan, so now I like have an excuse to be a, you know, pretend to be a fan of them, too. I only had Jaheim Bell there at first, so it's nice to see them get an opportunity in the league. Ryan Fitzgerald went to the Panthers as an undrafted free agent. So that's pretty cool right here in Charlotte where I'm from. Have to go check him out. You know, Graham Gano was their kicker for a long time as well. So they got that FSU connection there. Lo and behold, Michael, who would have ever thought? DJU went to the Chargers, man, on an undrafted free agent contract. Hopefully my man gets an opportunity. Look, hey. It's just been a crazy ride for him. And, you know, hopefully he don't spend that whole $3,000 signing bonus.
I was waiting for it. I was like, when are you going to mention it?
Bro, that's like Chick-fil-A pays a $3,000 sign-on bonus. I mean, I'm not trying to make fun of the guy.
How was that bro's rent check?
We're going to need $1,000 out of that to repair the bricks and doke.
Yes.
But yeah, man, just wanted to give a shout out to the guys. I heard their name get called, and you know, I have nothing against DJU. I hope he has success, but yeah, man, we're gonna need $1,000 out of $3,000 though.
Exactly.
We need to fix them bricks.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, yeah, for sure. It's, congratulations to Azarre. I mean, yeah, the speed thing really kind of precipitated his slide down. But he's going to be good for them. They got a steal there. He's going to be one of those good corners that's going to develop. I don't know if he'll develop into a Jalen Ramsey-like, but he'll have a really solid long-term career. Josh Farmer there in that fourth round, you know, he'll be a good pickup as well. He'll be able to eat up that middle, and hopefully he'll be able to develop there. And then, yeah, Fitzgerald, you know what? I mean, you know, most programs don't draft a kicker. So for him to get to the Carolina Panthers, you know, you saw what Fitzmagic did in the latter half of his career. He was almost automatic. So I assume that's going to translate to the NFL as well. And you know what? Congratulations to DJU. To go from one of the top 250s in the history of the high school rankings to getting on the Chargers, it's still an accomplishment. It's still a big deal to get to sign with an NFL team. Not many kids get to do that thing. And listen, his first thing he should do is take all of his offensive line out to In-N-Out, because that's probably what that $3,000 is going to be able to afford. So congratulations to him. And we're going to need some money for them bricks that you broke.
Yeah, for real. I mean, again, I don't hate on anybody. No, so, like, no. I hope he has a good career. And it's just, you know, I figured somebody would take a flyer on him with his size and his tools and stuff like that. So, I mean, we'll see, man. But, yeah, that was – it wasn't meant to be a shot. It was just kind of funny to see that, because it was like, man, it's crazy.
Yeah.
But the last thing that I want to touch on here to close out the show is baseball has a massive series this weekend, which is getting underway today on Friday against number 3 Clemson, 36-10 on the season. You know, this was really the big one that we had circled all year, because Clemson has kind of been that dominant ACC program right now. You got North Carolina coming up as well after Cal. And, you know, just when you thought things had bounced back against Virginia Tech, they go out. And now they looked really good in game one against Louisville. Of course, that's the game you had Jamie Arnold. And then the next two games didn't go so well. And so Florida State drops that series to Louisville on the road. Of course, we do know that Florida State is much better at home. So at least you get Clemson at home. But this is going to be really kind of that tough test for the season. This is going to show you maybe how things might look in the postseason to see how you hang with Clemson. Now, Clemson is an up-and-down team. They actually just got swept by NC State, which was kind of very head-scratching to see. But this is also a program that has series wins over Louisville, Georgia Tech, Wake Forest, and a midweek win over Georgia. So this is a really, really good program. Probably the best team you're going to see all year in the regular season. And so we'll see how Florida State fans. I think they can avoid the sweep. I think obviously with Jamie Arnold on the mound, they could probably at least hopefully get game one. Yeah. It would be great to get a series win, man, because you don't want to start dropping all these ranked series. They're probably not going to sweep Clemson, but if you can get at least get a series win, man, that would be great.
Yep.
The last thing I want to touch on with baseball too, though, is I did see an interview with Micah Posey, FSU pitching coach, who said that they are hoping, and I'm not putting a whole lot of stock into this, but they are hoping that maybe Cam Leiter could return at some point by the end of the year. They said he looks good. He looks how it's supposed to look. It's not something that's going to happen really soon, but they're hoping that sometime by the end of the season that he could be back. And, man, I think that would be absolutely massive. Obviously, look, he hasn't thrown in 2 years, so you're going to have to give him a chance to kind of get his rhythm back. But if he's already throwing and it looks good, man, for you to get – if you could get Cam Leiter back by the time you get to the postseason, regional play, maybe even the ACC tournament, but regional play, super regional, and potentially Omaha, that would just be an unreal boost, because right now your bullpen is just so unpredictable and so unreliable at times. Obviously, Cam Leiter's not probably going to be in a position to start because he hasn't thrown the ball in so long. But, man, if you could have him come in out of the bullpen, that would be a huge boost. So it's not going to happen during Clemson, so you can give me some thoughts on Clemson as well. But I did see that yesterday that maybe, hopefully, I'm not putting stock into it.
Yeah.
But hopefully, if you could get him back for a postseason run, man, that would be a humongous boost to this bullpen.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Cam Leiter's kind of like the Destiny Hill of
no
of
kidding, FSU man.
Baseball, jeez. Man. Just like you just never, I mean, it's just this unicorn you keep chasing. And so until I see him actually take the field, I'm not believing we're going to see him probably ever again in a Florida State uniform. So there's that. Yeah. This Clemson series, big. You know, what I would love to see, man, it's just I would love Link to just find two to three guys out of that bullpen that he's just going to work like a workhorse, because everything else is just not showing up for them. They have a situation with catcher that they're, you know, they've got to figure it out. And I'm hoping that this series, you know, Link will put out the best person from the bullpen and from the catcher situation to try to get them the win. Man, if we could get two or three out of this series, that will, I think, calm the anxiety that's building in the Florida State baseball fan base, but then also propel us forward. You know, Florida State still has a good shot at hosting regionals. They're only 31-10, I believe, right now. So this is a pivotal series. They've got to come out with a dub in the series. They've got to get two or three in the series to get more confidence behind the rest of the season going into the postseason.
Yeah, if you get a series win here and then against Cal, and then, you know, however that UNC series goes, you've got a good chance of hosting, but can't drop this and UNC, and then you might be in trouble. So
that's right.
The rubber meets the road here, my friend. Clemson coming to Hauser this weekend. The Chiefs, I think, are going to be there on Friday night, so it should be another great atmosphere. So hopefully they can capitalize on it and get a series win over the Tigers. So that's going to be it for this episode. We appreciate you guys tuning in. Make sure to drop a like and subscribe if you enjoy this episode. Also, a rate and review on the podcast helps us reach other Noll fans. Make sure you check out plantthespirit.com for all of our content, both written and audio. So appreciate you guys tuning in, and we will catch you on the next one. Thanks for watching. As always, go Noles.